Hi, everyone, and welcome to Backstory. I'm Dana Lewis. This backstory takes you to Taiwan. If you know your history, this nation of 22 million people has existed since the end of the Chinese Civil War in 1949, when the defeated nationalist government fled to the island as the communists under Mao Zedong swept to power in China. Since then, China has threatened to retake the island it considers little more than a wayward province. Taiwan has increasingly proclaimed its independence, and lately the language of diplomacy has been replaced by this. The sound of war drills as both sides flex military muscle, and Taiwan's president Tsai Ing-wen says Taiwan is not about to become another Hong Kong.
This is a very strong message from the people of Taiwan. That is, they don't like the idea of being threatened all the time. We're a successful democracy. We have pretty decent economy. Respect from China. China has been intensifying its threat. And they have all sorts of actions, military exercises, and they have their military vessels or aircraft cruising around the island. And also with the things happening in Hong Kong, people get a real sense that this threat is real. But the situation has changed. So we are facing a very different situation now. We are an independent country already, and we call ourselves Republic of China, Taiwan. Exclude the possibility of a war at any time. I do think we have a pretty decent capability here. Invading Taiwan is something that is going to be very costly for China.
China has repeatedly flown warplane sorties across the Taiwan Strait towards Taiwan, no longer respecting the 80-mile separation of the Taiwan Strait. Taiwan declaring it will defend itself from China is, quote, like ants trying to shake a tree, says China. Are we about to see a war between Taiwan and China, which could potentially drag in Taiwan's main arms supplier and defender, America? A war in Asia? High stakes. Taiwan on this backstory.
All right, joining me now from Taiwan, from Taipei, is the Asia correspondent for The Telegraph, Nicola Smith. Hi, Nicola. How are you doing there with, first of all, COVID-19?
Hi there, Dana. Yeah, we're doing great with COVID-19. Taiwan's been doing an excellent job in terms of combating the virus and not allowing it to come into Taiwan or to take hold here. So life is very normal.
Here in your home country, the United Kingdom, there are 65,000 excess deaths. One of the worst in Europe, one of the worst in the world. What did Taiwan get right that the UK got wrong?
Well, it's devastating how many deaths there have been in the UK. But I mean, Taiwan did everything right from the start. One of the reasons was because in 2003, when there was a SARS outbreak, they were hit badly. So they took that time to just prepare their pandemic plans and to put together a strategy to never allow that to happen. It helped that their vice president at the time the pandemic started to take hold was an epidemiologist. So he was an expert and an expert in government. So they really let their response be led by scientists, and politics didn't get involved. One of the first things they did was control the borders very, very carefully. First of all, restricting and monitoring flights from China. And then expanding that as the virus spread around the world. They had a great contact tracing system in place. They also had very strict quarantine and still do. So anyone coming into Taiwan and people are only allowed in on a restricted basis, must go through 14 days of compulsory quarantine. So all of these things came together. They acted very early, very decisively. And now life is normal. Schools are open. And people are going out to restaurants or meeting their families. They're just living life, you know, like before. We can't really travel very much without the quarantine, but you know, life is good here.
All right, everybody's healthy. That's good to know. I want to talk to you about China and the threat of war. So they've got COVID-19 right. Do they have China policy right? And as we, you know, speak, in the weeks leading up to this, you've had warplanes from China crossing the median line of the Taiwan Strait, approaching in a threatening manner. Some pretty strong messages coming from China.
Definitely, and it seems to be part of moves by China generally this year to have a very robust foreign policy and quite an aggressive one around the world. It's not only Taiwan. But you asked if Taiwan has its China policy right. That's very hard to do because fundamentally they're at loggerheads about the status of Taiwan, and there really can't be any compromise there. China has stated for decades that it believes that Taiwan is part of its territory, and Taiwan just disagrees. So there can't really be any agreement there. However, do they
in their hearts disagree? I mean, when you sit and talk to politicians and people who live in Taiwan, I mean, a lot of people felt, you know, probably 10, 20, 30 years ago, when you do polling, a lot of people identify with China. Now there's this completely new generations of people who don't identify with China. They see what's happening in Hong Kong. They probably feel pretty distant from ever joining China.
Yes, absolutely. And I don't think it's just the younger generations. I mean, now when you look at the polls, the overwhelming majority would say that they identify as being Taiwanese. There's always a very small minority who'd identify as Chinese, but that's just not. Taiwan has moved on, basically, and it's forged its own identity. It is de facto independent.
China hasn't moved on, and
absolutely not.
You believe it's inevitable that this wayward province, that's what they consider Taiwan, will rejoin either willingly or possibly through armed action. I mean, and it seems like the leader of China is saying, we're not going to pass this to another generation and another generation. He wants to bring Taiwan into China.
Absolutely. And President Xi Jinping has made it very clear. He said in a speech last year that if Taiwan would not unify peacefully, that force was not off the table. And he's also made it a very personal part of his own legacy. He's one of the strongest presidents since Mao. And so for him, it's personal, but it's also a very nationalistic cause in China as well. It's one of the unresolved issues of the Chinese Civil War in the 1940s. So you see this rise of nationalism in China and taking back, it's not even taking back, Taiwan never was never ruled by the Chinese Communist Party, but incorporating Taiwan into China is a very big national issue in China. It's not just the government. I think, you know, a lot of the population's behind that sentiment as well.
So in Taiwan, they believe that they're going to stay independent. And how are they going to fend off China? Militarily?
Well, that's a good question because, you know, you've got Taiwan is it's a democratically run island of about 24 million people. It's, you know, compared to this huge behemoth next door is this, you know, China with over a billion people and a huge military force. So to fend off China militarily would be very difficult. And Taiwan does face a huge military threat of invasion and of China trying to take it by force. It couldn't fend off China alone. It would need support from the US and other regional and global allies. And so this is a very tense time for the Taiwanese. They know that they've seen what has happened in Hong Kong. It's a different situation in Hong Kong. You mentioned that earlier. But they have no intention of taking the offer of one country, two systems, now that they've seen how Beijing has just run roughshod over that. And so there is no easy or happy solution to the Taiwan question. The government of President Tsai Ing-wen has said that they want the status quo. They've offered to talk to Beijing to find some kind of solution, but Beijing has just completely cut ties with her government.
How do you read President Trump's administration? First of all, would they come to Taiwan's aid, and militarily, would they defend Taiwan? Let me ask you that first of all. What's the read on it there?
It's very hard to know exactly what the US would do. There are a number of factors at play. In a lot of ways, they've been very good for Taiwan, that they have shown a lot of support. They've sent two recent high-level visits to Taiwan, and that has boosted Taiwan's confidence. At the same time, in doing so, China has been riled, and that's raised tension. So it's a bit of a double-edged sword.
Nicholas, do you read it, and others there, do people read it as Trump being supportive of Taiwan, or do they read it as sort of short-term, low-horizon policy by the Trump administration, where they're just trying to irritate China because they have all sorts of trade issues with them and other issues with them?
Well, it's hard to take the US election completely out of the equation. But generally, I think people do feel supported by the Trump administration. And there's a little bit of nervousness about a Biden administration coming in and being weaker on China. But I don't think necessarily that people trust President Trump himself. It's more the people who are working for him, and also Senate and friends in Senate and Congress that has representatives, that there is a very strong Taiwan lobby in the US, and that has grown in recent years, and there's a lot of support for President Tsai. So when it comes to military action, nobody's quite clear what the US would do. It would depend, first of all, what China does, if it's a full-scale invasion across the beaches, or whether they choose to try to take over some of Taiwan's outlying islands, or they go ahead with a blockade or a cyber attack. It would depend on, first of all, on China's actions. But the US has given Taiwan commitments towards its security, but these commitments haven't been explicit in terms of action and what they would do if there was a full-scale invasion. So that is a big question hanging over Taiwan's future, and nobody really knows the answer at the moment.
Is Nicholas Smith allowed to be the Asia correspondent, or is she allowed to leave the country right now? Are her editors back at the Telegraph saying, you can't leave, you better stay, because things are that hot right now?
Not yet, no. I mean, I think at the moment we are, it'd be very difficult to leave because of COVID-19, but I think at the moment people are more nervous about the period between the US election and the inauguration, that 4 months in between, when it could, if there is some kind of discord in the US, and everyone else is so distracted by the pandemic, that President Xi could see a window of opportunity there to take action against Taiwan. And if you don't have a strong leadership in the US at that point, then that could be very detrimental to Taiwan's interests. So I think that there's certainly some nervousness just now in Taiwan with the number of military sorties that China's been sending over the past few weeks, and certainly over the past few days, it's escalated again. So people are starting to wonder about what is going to happen and how they're going to deal with it. But the biggest concern is about that time in the US, that 4 months where we're not quite sure what the presidency will hold.
Is there a perception that an incoming Democrat President Biden would be soft on China, or it's just a big question mark? People don't really understand how he would react.
I think
there was an incoming president on the Democrat. if Biden were to win? And that's a big, bigger question mark.
People, yes, there is a question mark. I mean, I think generally people are a bit more wary or unsure about Biden, about how he might react. I mean, at the same time, there is unpredictability about Trump because, you know, ultimately he hasn't got rid of that businessman image where he could very well trade off Taiwan as some kind of pawn to get something else out of Xi Jinping. There are concerns on both sides, regardless of who comes in. I think, though, for the US, it would be very difficult to give up Taiwan. It would be very difficult not to step in, not least because of Taiwan's strategic importance to the US and to the rest of the region and the world. And currently, you know, it is part of this first island chain that goes from the Russian coast down to the Malay Peninsula. And if China was to take over Taiwan, it would get a Pacific coastline, which would be a huge problem for the US and its Indo-Pacific strategy. And it would allow Taiwan China to dock submarines and launch them off the coast of Taiwan. So there's a military and security concern for the US. Taiwan is also a huge semiconductor producer. So, you know, they would not want China to control that supply chain. So there are a lot of reasons why it's in the US's interests to defend Taiwan. And I personally can't see why that would be much different under a Biden presidency as compared to a Trump presidency.
Just the last question, just to kind of end where we started in terms of Taiwan, and that is, maybe the answer is obvious, but why is China being so aggressive in the last few weeks, in the last few months? Is it because of the arms sales and the diplomatic visits by Americans? Is it just that? Or do they see a window now of you know, if they're going to press Taiwan, now is the time to do it? And is it a bluff or do you read it otherwise?
I mean, I think it's the reasons you suggested. It's a bit of both, really. I mean, China has escalated its actions in recent weeks because of growing ties between the US and Taiwan, with the arms sales and the visits. That has certainly triggered China. At the same time, China was always has had Taiwan in its sights. It's a strategy and it's a it's a strategy that it's not going to give up, and it always has the intention of taking over Taiwan by peaceful means or by force. So I think that regardless of what the US does, China is going to escalate its actions. And it's also part of Xi Jinping's wider strategy. This year, no one's quite sure why he's being very aggressive towards India and towards China. It's also taking it's really shifted its relations with countries like Australia. And so there is a lot of speculation, and no one really knows if this is true, but there's a lot of speculation that many of these very hardline foreign policy actions have been motivated by President Xi trying to distract the domestic audience from some serious domestic problems with the economy, with the coronavirus, with severe flooding this summer. This is a classic foreign policy move, is to just distract the audience at home and show yourself to be strong abroad.
Nicholas Smith, the Asia correspondent with The Telegraph. Great to talk to you.
You too. Thank you.
Bonnie Glaser is a senior advisor for Asia and the director of the China Power Project at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. And that kind of rolls off my tongue, the China Power Project. What is that?
Well, it is a data-driven website to evaluate how China's power is evolving relative, of course, to other countries in key areas pertaining to economics, technology, military, international image, and social or soft power.
All right. But Bonnie is just not another kind of think tank person, because when I read back through your resume, Bonnie, you've been doing this for a couple of decades at least, and you understand China very well.
Well, I think those of us who have studied China for decades know there is more that we do not know than we do know. You certainly can't go to China once as a tourist and be an expert. And there's so much in China that is opaque, very much a black box, especially under Xi Jinping. So it's always a challenge to figure out what underlies China's policies.
You've advised the U.S. government in the past. Would you advise them right now that they're doing a smart thing with regard to Taiwan? Increased arms sales, diplomatic visits. It's escalating, isn't it?
Yes, I think that the United States has a lot at stake with Taiwan. And frankly, I believe that the president of Taiwan is not pursuing provocative measures, and the Chinese are putting enormous diplomatic and military pressure on her and her government. And so then the question is, what does the U.S. really need to do in response? Because we don't want to have a military conflict across the strait. And we don't want Taiwan to be intimidated or the people to feel that they have to succumb to China's demands when, in fact, that is not what they choose to do. And this is a hard set of challenges for the U.S. government. So I support many things that the Trump administration is doing. We do have an obligation under the Taiwan Relations Act to sell arms. Sometimes we sell things that are appropriate. Other times we do not. I personally think that spending billions of dollars on tanks was not a good way for Taiwan to spend its very precious defense dollars. But there's about to be a new package of arms sold to Taiwan that will really focus more on asymmetrical capabilities, things like sea mines, coastal defense, cruise missiles.
Right. Seven major weapon systems, mines, cruise missiles, drones. I mean, the thing is, though, in the past, the U.S. has kind of dribbled in weapon supplies to Taiwan. This is much more overt. This is a much bigger package this time. And is that designed to kind of tell China, look, don't mess with Taiwan?
No, I don't really think so. I think actually the dribble approach is the right one. In other words, Taiwan should be treated like every other country that purchases arms from the United States. When they make a request, we should evaluate it and give it a thumbs up or a thumbs down. Really no need to accumulate large packages. We should just take them as they are submitted. So frankly, I think that is the better approach. But what the signaling we're doing toward Taiwan is more in terms of U.S. Military exercises. We've seen U.S. bombers in the area. We've seen an increase in U.S. naval activity. We are also, in a sense, provoking China and the sending of high-level U.S. officials, which personally I support, the Chinese have seen as a real threat to their sovereignty. So part of the problem is that there's really no dialogue going on at the moment.
Why would you support provoking them?
Well, it's their perception that we're provoking them. I'm not sure that I believe that it should be seen as a provocation. So I think there's nothing wrong with sending the U.S. Health and Human Secretary to Taiwan. I mean, Taiwan has had about 400 cases of COVID and seven deaths. They are an exemplary model for the rest of the world. Boy, the United States could learn a lot from them. So why not send our health and Human Secretary to Taiwan? But what I was just going to say is that I think that it's the absence of dialogue that makes this very dangerous. And there's no real dialogue between the U.S. and China on these issues. Conflict prevention and management, there's really no conversations between China and Taiwan either.
You know, when you talk about dialogue, though, I would think that normally you have a conflict, you have dialogue, and you move towards resolution. The whole ability to keep peace with Taiwan and China for 40 years and more would be that you simply don't address the issue and you keep it vague. And that seems that that status quo of murky smoke and mirrors has kind of kept peace between China and Taiwan, because the U.S. has a one China policy. And I'm not even sure what that means. Maybe you can define it for me. It's independent. It's not independent. Where are we now?
Well, the U.S. Does not take a position on who has sovereignty over Taiwan. So it doesn't recognize Taiwan's claim to sovereignty, nor does it recognize the PRC claim. The one China policy is essentially that Beijing represents China in the international community. If we go back to the language of the Shanghai communique, the United States acknowledged China's claim over Taiwan, but it did not recognize that claim. And this is a difference between Beijing and Washington today.
All right. So anybody who doesn't understand this, because I know you've lived with it for a long time, that sounds confusing. And I think it's meant to be a little confusing. And that is, Ronald Reagan gave 6 assurances to Taiwan in 1982. And that was recently declassified, right? Mm-hmm. I haven't read the documents, but it was recently declassified. And everybody says that reportedly there is a very clear commitment to defend Taiwan against an attack by China, correct?
No. No, the 6 assurances. The 6 assurances do not pertain to a promise to attack to defend Taiwan if attacked.
Were there subsequent promises to that?
No, no. In fact, under the Taiwan Relations Act, the United States does not have an ironclad commitment to Taiwan to defend it. This is something that would be left up to the president and the Congress if there were to be an attack on Taiwan. And so there are people now who are advocating, both experts and members of Congress, that we should abandon what is often referred to as strategic ambiguity. In other words, not making clear whether we would come to Taiwan's defense, and adopt a position of strategic clarity. So some people think changing that declaratory policy and giving the president an advance authority to send troops if China is attacked, that will deter China. But the problem is that the U.S. military capabilities are really weakened right now in terms of intervening on Taiwan's behalf. So I think that changing our declaratory policy in the absence of bolstering U.S. military capabilities is potentially dangerous and could provoke the attack that we seek to prevent.
Somebody says that, you know, if the U.S. were to seriously want to support Taiwan in invasion, I mean, you're talking about at least 4 divisions, some 80,000, a commitment of 80,000 troops. This is no small conflict that would draw in U.S. Navy and the Air Force and then boots on the ground in terms of the U.S. Army.
Well, it's hard to know how quickly such a conflict would escalate, but it certainly would start out as a naval conflict, and Taiwan would seek to hold out long enough for a sufficient amount of U.S. troops to arrive, and that would probably take months. The U.S. would initially flow forces from what we have deployed in the region, of course, primarily in Japan, and perhaps from Guam, but then also from continental U.S. It could become a very large-scale conflict, and it's one that I think everybody hopes to avoid.
Do you think China is serious about taking over Taiwan and before this president leaves the Communist Party? Because the China's president has said over and over again that he doesn't think they should not be kept passing through generation to generation to generation.
Well, I think that Xi Jinping's statement, which he has made twice, that it shouldn't be passed down from generation to the next, is that does indicate at least some impatience, but I don't think that indicates urgency. For the legitimacy of the Chinese Communist Party, Xi Jinping must say that reunification is inevitable. And he has talked about national rejuvenation, which he calls, you know, the Chinese dream that should be achieved by 2049. He has said that that should include unification with Taiwan. Now, he won't be alive then, so we don't know whether he will actually try to achieve this in his lifetime. But his rhetorical statements, of course, must be that this is a sovereignty issue for China and that Taiwan belongs to China. But I think that Xi Jinping has other priorities that are more urgent, that he would not want to put at risk at this particular moment. So if backed into a corner, if he feels that his own position, the legitimacy of the Chinese Communist Party, is in jeopardy, then perhaps he would act. So I don't rule out that he would, but I think that his preference is still to try to resolve the differences with Taiwan peacefully. And he has not abandoned the strategy, essentially, that he inherited from Hu Jintao, which is peaceful development across the Taiwan Strait. And he continues to speak about peaceful reunification, even though, of course, he does not rule out the use of force. So if the U.S. and Taiwan are not careful, perhaps they could provoke the reaction from China that they seek to avoid. So it is difficult to determine what will deter Beijing and what will provoke it. And there are differences on those questions.
What is the point of sending warplanes from China across the Taiwan Strait, that 80-mile nautical mile stretch of water that they've been doing very recently, sending tens of warplanes approaching Taiwan and saying that they don't even recognize the middle of the strait?
Well, certainly the PRC has never recognized the median line of the strait, which was drawn so many decades ago by the United States. But they have tacitly acknowledged it for many years. In the 1990s, when Taiwan President Lee Teng-hui gave a speech at Cornell University, and Beijing thought that he was pushing for independence, and they flew dozens of fighters across the center line then. And the situation was quiet for 20 years. And in March of 2019, China started again. And I believe this past week was the fifth time.
Because of the change of leadership in Taiwan? I mean, the race for what appears to be independence now. And you have generations of...
Well, appears to who to be independence. I can give you lots of examples of actions that President Tsai Ing-wen has taken to try and tamp down tensions and to discourage radical elements of her own party from pushing for independence.
But she ran on an independence platform, didn't she?
Her party has had an independence platform in the past.
You think she's more moderate?
I do think she's more moderate. I think she's very prudent.
Do you, just to wrap this up, take this back to your own politics as you rapidly approach the November election, do you see a distinct difference between a President Trump administration and a Democrat President Biden in terms of the way they'll deal with Taiwan, one more aggressively, one less, or how do you see it?
Well, I would highlight one potential difference, and this is, of course, my own personal view. But I think that a Biden administration would also want to strengthen deterrence and prevent war. And they would want to strengthen the U.S.-Taiwan relationship. But I think that they would go back to doing things in a more quiet way. And we have seen this in many administrations in the past, where we sail, of course, naval ships through the Taiwan Strait, but it's only under the Trump administration that this was made public. We have high-level meetings with officials from Taiwan, but we don't necessarily make them public. So I think that there might be an effort just to go back to doing things a little bit more quietly so that we don't seem to be humiliating Xi Jinping and pushing him into a corner and perhaps forcing him to make a decision that he doesn't want to make. But I also think that the Biden administration will try to resume dialogue with China at many levels to talk about how we can avoid miscalculation and crisis.
You see a more dangerous situation, it seems, if President Trump wins re-election.
Well, I think that it is potentially dangerous right now. And I'm quite worried about the situation between now and the U.S. election and then the inauguration of the next president. And I think that that is the dangerous time. But I would say also that if elected, that I think President Biden would be a firm supporter for Taiwan, for the values that we share. And for its role in the international community. And that would be consistent with prior Democratic presidents as well.
Are you more worried? I promise it's the last question, Bonnie. Are you more worried now? You're wiser and you've studied this a long time, but times have changed. China seems to be more aggressive. We've seen what's going on in Hong Kong. The U.S. under Trump is much more outspoken with regard to Taiwan and more overt. Are you more concerned now than you've ever been in terms of a possible conflict between Taiwan and China?
Yes, I am. I think that the combination of PRC capabilities militarily, Xi Jinping is a very aggressive leader who is less risk-averse than his predecessors, certainly a more overt level of support from the United States for Taiwan. And yet the factor that is perhaps least worrisome to me is actually Taiwan's policies itself. And in the past, when we've had a risk of conflict at times, and like when Chen Shui-bian was president, Taiwan was seen as the provocateur. So the dynamics are quite different today.
Bonnie Glaser, at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. Terrific to talk to you. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
And that's our backstory on Taiwan. Subscribe to this podcast. We are now in season 2, and I've made real attempts to keep the podcast as international as possible because international news is undercovered by most news organizations. Hit the subscribe button as we have covered stem cell breakthrough, Belarus, and Russia, and Navalny, and nerve agents, American democracy and policing, and Britain's Brexit, nuclear arms, the West Bank in Israel, Trump's troop drawdown in Germany and NATO, and of course the pandemic, and Afghanistan, and Beirut. Our interviews include former foreign ministers, American army commanders, epidemiologists. We've all had to learn to say that word a lot this year. Prime ministers, police, experts on biological chemical warfare, nuclear arms negotiators, and the people I have great respect for, journalists, who have been there, done that, and know what's happening. I'm Dana Lewis. I hope you will share our podcast and keep listening. And I'll talk to you again soon.